Until yesterday at Lancelot Mass. And what you have to imagine is the Bard Taliesin, who is the witness and the Arthur's poet, but he is the witness to most of the main events of the whole Arthurian saga. He watches Lancelot perform a Mass after it's all over. All the Arthur is in Avalon. The Guinevere is dead. And really, this is a sort of a final blessing, I think, on everybody who has been part of the great Arthurian story. So I'll just read it and I'll explain. I mean, it's always easy. I'll explain a little bit about it afterwards, but I'll just read it first of all. Taliesin at Lancelot's Mass. I came to his altar when dew was bright on the grass. He was not sworn of the priesthood, began the Mass. The altar was an ancient stone laid upon stones. Carbonek's arch, Camelot's wall, the frame of boar's bones. In armour before the earthen footpace he stood. On the circuit the lions of his house, dappled with blood, rampant, regardant. But he wore no helm or sword, and his hands were bare as laterans to the work of our Lord. In the ritual before the altar, Lancelot began to pass. All the dead lords of the table were drawn from their graves to the Mass. They stood inward turned, as shields on a white rushing deck, between Nimue of Broselande and Elaine of Carbonek. In Blanchefort's cell at Almesbury, the Queen Guinevere felt the past exposed, and the details sharp and dear draw at the pang in the breast, till, rich and reconciled, the mystical milk rose in the mother of Logres' child. Out of the queen's substitution, the wounded and dead king entered into salvation to serve the holy thing. Singly seen in the Mass, owning the double crown, going to the altar Peles, and Arthur moving down. Lancelot and Arthur wove the web. The sky opened on moon and sun. Between them, light traced on high, the unseen knight of terror stood as a friend. Invisible things invisible awaited the end. Lancelot came to the cannon. My household stood around me, bearers of the banners, bounteous in blood, each at the earthen footpace ordained to be blessed and to bless, each than I and than all, lordlier and less. Then at the altar we sang in our office the cycle of names of their great attributed virtues. The festival of flames fell from new sky to new earth. The light in bands of bitter glory renewed the imperial lands. Then the Byzantine ritual, the epiclesis, began. Then their voices in ours invoked the making of man. Petal on petal floated out of the blossom of the host, and always the Theotokos conceived by the Holy Ghost. We exposed, we exalted the unity. Prism shone webs, paths, points. As it was done, the Antipodean zones were retrieved around a white rushing deck, and the acts of the emperor took zenith from Caucasia to Carbonek. Over the altar, flame of anatomized fire, the high prince stood, Gaia in burning Gaia, day level before him, night mast behind. The table ascended, the glories intertwined. The table ascended, each in turn lordliest and least, slave and squire, woman and wizard, poet and priest, interchanged adoration, interdispersed prayer. The ruddy pillar of the infant was the passage of the porphyry stair. That which had been Taliesin rose in the rood, in the house of Galahad over the altar he stood, manacled by the web, in the web made free. There was no capable song for the joy in me. Joy to new joy, piercing from paths foregone. That which had been Taliesin made joy to a joy unknown. Manifest joy speeding in a joy unmanifest. Lancelot's voice below sang, Ita missa est. Fast to the Byzantine harbour, gather the salvage sails. That which once was Taliesin rides to the barrows of Wales, up the vales of the Wye. If skill be of work or of will, in the disperse homes of the company, of the household, let the company pray for it still. He's a famously obscure poet. But I just want to explain a little bit. We're going to look more to next year, because he has a very particular vision of the Arthurian story. But what he's imagining here, the scene that he's imagining, is that we have, this is Lancelot acting as a priest, saying mass for everybody who has participated in the Arthurian story, and gathering together the whole story, gathering its beauty and its errors, its powerful places, its weak places, and offering it up into a new, into a new set of possibilities. And it sort of begins really with this idea of it begins in an interesting place, because Lancelot, of course, is not a priest, but this is the idea of the priesthood of all believers. And that the Mass really is this kind of love feast, this gathering together in love and communion. And he begins the Mass, but the altar is an ancient stone laid upon stones. So the altar itself is not just medieval, it's ancient, it's laid upon stones, laid ultimately upon the, feel like, the strata of stone we find in the Red Shaman of Babylon's cave. But it's also got built into it stones from the Arch of Carbonek. Carbonek is the castle of the Grail. Stone from Camelot, Arthur's castle. But also the frame, the relics of Bors, who is the Grail winner, who comes home and who earths the Grail in earth, are included in the altar. So this is this is a kind of redemptive act, really, by one of the few people who could not hold the balance, could not hold the continuity necessary for Camelot to be sustained. So this is his redemptive act of prayer and blessing. An invocation, and the altar place is the gathering point, and he's clad in armor because, of course, he's a knight. The earthen footplace is the piece of earth where the altar is set upon. Circuit of his house, he had lions of his image. And what we hear is, in the ritual before the altar, all the dead lords of the table are drawn from their graves to the Mass, and they stand, just like they gather, and they stand between Nimue, who is the Lady of the Lake, and Elaine of Carbonek, who is the Lady of the Grail. So they stand in a certain sense between the world of faerie, between the transcendental, transcendental world of the Grail. So this, which is the, if you like, the two polarities really, around which the Arthurian world oscillates. So again, we see this just great, this kind of great gathering together. And then we get an image of Guinevere, who is now the secluded nun at Almesbury. And she's resonating, in a sense, with this mass, feeling the past exposed, the detail sharp and clear, and the pang in the breast rises, rich and reconciled. And we get this powerful image of the mystical milk, rose in the mother of Logres' child. So there's something about Guinevere as the mother, as the holder of the table, and the idea, again, this is so much about the power of the feminine principle, of that sense of the mist out of the reconciliation of the past, out of the past wounds, the mystical milk that feeds us, that creates the new life, that redeems as well. So she is this figure, rather Bina-like figure now in terms of the Tree of Life, kind of understanding, making sense of, and making the offering of the mystical milk of love and kindness. And as she holds that place, as she, in a sense, embraces that, her part, not just her part, she becomes the mother who is the mother of the whole story, holding everything. And out of that, they say, out of the queen's substitution, the wounded and dead king, who is Arthur, enters into salvation to serve the holy thing. Now, so this is the place, that this act that we'll look at a lot next year, which is this practice of the way in which we hold each other in the mystery of love. So she, by holding the whole of the story, by holding the, enables the Arthur, the dead person who is to come, that is Arthur, enters into salvation. And what that means really is the Arthur entering into that state of kind of resurrected state of union with the divine, where he serves, and the holy thing, of course, is the Grail, where he serves the Grail, he serves the, and in a sense he represents himself as Arthur, but he also represents the lineage of all those who have placed themselves in the line of the kind of the service of the Grail. You might remember when we have done the meditations based on the Rollright Stone, when we enter into the Kingstone, we enter into this kind of lineage of all those who have given themselves into the mystery of the Grail, into the service of the Grail. And in a way, what this poem is enacting is something very similar to the Rollright ritual, where the Rollrights themselves are the gathering of the presences. The entering into salvation, the entering into the lineage of the sacred kings and queens that we find in the Kingstone, is that kind of entering into the stream of the Grail through the mediation of the mysterious mother whom in the Rollrights we find in the Whispering Nights, the cave of the mother. And he enters into salvation to serve the holy thing, singly seen in the Mass, and the Mass obviously that's the image of Christ, but owning the double crown. And the double crown in a certain sense is the crown of the Pope. It's a double crown because it's both secular and sacred. He draws a comparison between King Pelles, who is the wounded Grail King, and Arthur, who is the outer figure, who brings the sense, takes the life of the Grail and and through the work of the sword of clarity and beauty, creates the Grail Kingdom on Earth. And then we have this kind of union then between Arthur and Lancelot and Arthur. So if we remember that the great, you know, the Arthurian story ends with Arthur and Lancelot at war with each other. Together now, the Lancelot and Arthur weave the web. And between them, the unseen knight of terror stands as a friend. The unseen knight of terror is death. And the, in the sense, both of the death that have happened, but also death as the, as woven into the, into all our lives, stands with them in this redeemed place as a friend. And we have this sense, really, of all things coming to a culmination. Invisible things and visible waited the end. Lancelot then comes to the canon of the Mass, which is the place in the Mass where you're approaching the Eucharist, where you're bringing everything together into the Agape. And Taliesin says, "My heart," and this is the place where everything gathers together. So Taliesin tells us, "Around me, my household stands." You know, and each at the earthen footpost ordained to bless and be blessed. Each than I and than all, lordlier and less. So there's what he's describing here is something he calls coherence, in that the colloquy, the everything gathering together into the deep so each of us is great and small, each of us blesses and is blessed. So it's that kind of gathering that he's hinting at. Then at the altar we stand in our office, the cycle of names. So we're inviting in the great energies of the universe, the archangels, the names of God, the center presence of the Christ, the Mother. And we bring the great attributed virtues into existence. The light in bands of bitter glory renewed the imperial lands. So that sense really of the glory coming out of the unmanifest, being made manifest through the Mass, through the intention of all those who make the offering. And in a way if we think of the Rollright ritual, the Rollright meditation for a moment, if we think of that movement into the inner, the entrance where we have to enter into life and death, come to the place of the sword where we are challenged, and we align ourselves with the energy of the energy of the rod, the energy of all those who have wielded the rod, have entered into the sort of lineage of kingship. We enter then into the cave of the Mother, and then we return into the circle of stones, bringing with us the new life, the new possibilities. And that, in a sense, is the virtues, the powers, the new life that has enters into the next turning of the wheel. And he emphasizes this by saying, "Then the Byzantine ritual Epiclesis began." Now, the Epiclesis is the descent of the Holy Spirit, the descent of that kind of light. And in the Theotokos, he talks about Theotokos is the one who bears the presence of the divine. So as we return out of the mystery, we bring with us the Grail presence, the mystery of the deep light and the inner light. And we become the God-bearer, the Theotokos, the one who, like the Grail, creates regeneration wherever we are. And he goes on to explain this, we exalted the unity, prism shone webs, paths and points. And that is really about the creation, a recreation of the web, the sense of the prism being the white light then manifesting in lots of color, the web paths and points Points we could see is the Sephirot, the path, the places of connection. So we see the sense of a new web being created as we move from the out of the old and into the new. And the Antipodean zones were retrieved around a white rushing deck. Now in his kind of mythology, which I'll talk about next year, the Antipodean is of course the southern hemisphere, and there he uses it as an image for the shadow side, the clipotic side, the place that has become separated from the unity. So here the places of separation are gathered back. And the act of the emperor took Zenith from Caucasia to Carbonath. The emperor here uses the image of the Byzantine emperor, but what he's meaning is the divine presence that gathers everything to itself in an organic unity. And then what we're shown is over the altar, so as all this is happening, over the altar, flame of anatomized fire, so that the sense of matter itself taking fire, flesh becoming fire. So seeing a great resurrection. And what we see in the midst of that resurrection is Galahad, the high prince of the Grail, as a sort of a spinning spiral of fire and life. Standing straight, but with this spiraling flame. So, who represents really the doorway of resurrection, the doorway of becoming new. Day level before him, night mass behind. So we get the linking together of day and night, we get the linking together of all the opposites in the spiral, straight, living flame, which is in a sense the living flame of love. What happens then is the table ascended. So all of those who have gathered at the table, who have played their parts, been at the quests, worked with whatever they have worked with, whether within the castle or out on quest, are gathered, each in turn lordliest and least. So whatever their position, whatever they have done, slave and squire, woman, wizard, poet and priest, they interchange adoration, they interdisperse prayer. So again, whoever, whatever we have been or are, we have our place, and our place is equal. And we weave, and everything is woven together in this sense of the prayer of resurrection. The ruddy pillar of the infant, so the infant is, of course, the infant Christ, is the passage of the porphyry stair. Now the porphyry stair, again he's using Byzantine imagery, the porphyry stair is a stair that leads up to the presence of the emperor. Here he's using it as the place that leads us into the presence of the divine. And the pillar of the infant really is the sense of the straight kind of pillar within the, which reveals the presence of the child of light who is the infant Christ, who is the new light appearing in our own hearts. And then we get this, and then of course Taliesin himself then is swept up into this act of resurrection. That which had been Taliesin rose in the rood, and the rood is the cross, and this is the place of resurrection, and it's also the pillar of the infant. In the house of Galahad, over the altar he stood, so he comes into that field, that spiraling straight field created by Galahad. And this particular phrase, that which had been Taliesin. So the old identity is shed in favor of a new and deeper identity. And he is connected to the great web that connects everything. Manacled by the web, manacled meaning I'm connected deeply into the web, but in my choice to enter into the intercommunion with the web and all beings, I am freed. And then this wonderful phrase, there is no capable song for the joy in me. So that sense of all the pain, all the sorrow, all the regrets, all the difficulty, there is no capable song for the joy in me that arises in this moment of reconciliation and resurrection. Joy to new joy, piercing from paths forgone. That which had been Taliesin made joy to a joy unknown, so emphasizing this deepening current of joy, this deepening field of joy. And it's that which had been Taliesin. So his identity as Taliesin is now gone. He's more authentically himself. And moving now in from joy to joy into deeper and deeper into the mystery. Manifest joy speeding in a joy unmanifest. So that going more deeply into the mystery. Lancer's voice below saying, "Ita missa est." This is the ending of the Latin Mass. "Ita missa est" means it is accomplished. The Mass is accomplished. So that sense of accomplishment, finality, blessing, it is done. And then we get this great bit at the end, because he's vanished into the transcendental. And he is with the transcendental. "Fast to the Byzantine harbour gather the salvage sails. That which was once Taliesin rides to the barrows of Wales, up the vales of the Wye." So this is him returning to the places of his origin, the places of the barrows of Wales, the vales of the Wye. "If skill be of work or of will, in the dispersed homes of the household, let the company pray for it still." So he says to those he leaves behind, those who are part of his company, his household, "Pray for me, I will pray for you. We will pray for each other." And so we're really getting in this poem that sense of the wave and the particle. So what you see is the shedding of particle identity into this resurrected place that redeems all the errors, all the struggles, all the difficulties, and then returns in that resurrected form into the barrows of Wales, into the vales of the Wye, and into relationship with all that has been known. So there is no leaving behind. There is a magnification and a glorification. You know, what is meant by that phrase, "Rest in peace and rise in glory." So rising into a new life, a deeper life that doesn't leave behind the old life, the old possibilities. It's in a way Blackie greeting Tom in the resurrected life. We do not lose that which we love rises with us in glory, in particularity, not in as often we can think in spiritual terms as just vanishing into a white light. This is a genuine, resurrected sense of becoming more ourselves, most purely ourselves, most deeply ourselves, connected to everything else that is equally itself, equally particle, equally wave. Now, when we did the Rollright ritual meditation and the Rollright ritual itself, we enter a place of death. We are challenged. We enter into the mystery of the circle. The equivalent in a way of the Galahad's house is the King's Stone. and the Whispering Nights, where we are. The King's Stone is much more like the burning fire which renews us. The Whispering Nights are like the sense of the Theotokos, the sense of the mystical mother reweaving us, recreating us into new form, so that we enter again the circle of the stones, the circle of life, renewed. And in a way, this is a process that we can continue to do and continues all through our life. But it is also a process, of course, that will happen at the end of our lives. It's a process of where our identity, a sense of who we are, becomes a transfigured identity. One of the things that has always struck me, really, about the, I think of the few really advanced spiritual people I've known, is that they are not bland. They're very specifically themselves. They're fluid, normally very fluid, very alive. There's a great presence that comes with them. But there's nothing generic about them. Their sense of their own individuality is magnified by the light that flows through them. And in a certain sense, what's being described in this poem is this transfiguration, magnification, becoming most purely yourself. So that which was Taliesin is now transfigured by standing in the house of Galahad, standing in the spiral, straight, burning fire that takes away all that is inessential. But he does not lose identity. The place he goes back to, he goes to the Barrows of Wales. That which was Taliesin goes there. He goes up the valley of the Wye. The Wye Valley was where Taliesin was supposed to have been born. He reaches out to the companions of his household, asking for their prayers and praying for them in turn. He is both free and manacled to the web, and by being manacled to the web is made free, and is therefore in that freedom journeying in the joy and through joy, a joy that does not exclude sorrow. A joy that is not dissociated, a joy, of course, that gathers all the sorrows, all the wounding of everything that has happened at the table, all the betrayals, all the losses, and gathers it into itself. There's that wonderful bit in the railroad ritual where at the end is when you come out of the Whispering Nights, out of the cave of the mother, and the entrance into the stone, where this be one with we, where you enter into the communion of souls, you're welcomed into the circle, your place is there, because the ring of the railroad stone is of course also the table. You know, the King's Stone is the Grail Spear, the sword, the challenge is the sword. The cave of the Whispering Nights is the place of the chalice. So we've got about 10 minutes left. Let's just see if there's any thoughts or clarifications needed about any of that. I've forgotten David Spangler saying once to me. David's about 10 years older than me, and he is assuming he will die before me. But who knows? He's not very well at the moment, but he said, I'll come and say hello, you know. But of course it'll be like, hi, remember me? I used to be David Spangler. And there's just something wonderful about David. You know, again, he's another one of these people who the sense of experience of the inner is so profound, really, that you feel it. And in a certain sense, when he was speaking that, he was sort of speaking from that soul level of himself. Where is he? And David is interesting, really, when he talks about the inner levels. He always talks about how one of our problems is that we think of them as being ethereal, more subtle than the outer planes. was actually his experience, and I agree with him, is that it's we who are the ethereal ones. Because in our the instability of our minds, the instability of our awareness, we flicker away. If our inner beings often will say to you, well, where are you? What happened? You were just here, and then you went. Because of our, in a sense, this dynamic of the inner dialogue that takes us away. And in a certain sense, then when we start to look at the experience of the of passing through death, passing into another form of existence, what Charles Williams is pointing out, what David is also suggesting, that though my inner teachers have suggested also, is that you step into a fuller life, a more more real life, a more tangible life, not into something that is a theory. One of the great things that's done damage, I think, to our sense of life after death in the West is this image of being up on a cloud, playing a harp, you know, which makes it sound appallingly boring, and ethereal, and therefore not real. Whereas the deeper sense is the stepping into a deeper reality, a more tangible reality, more fluid also maybe, but a place of deeper life, and not an attenuation of life. And in a way, one of the important things about the work that we do is to prepare ourselves for the shock of that deeper impact, that deeper awareness. Because actually what can again, my guides would say, that sometimes people in the shock of that close themselves down and become encapsulated and need a lot of help to adjust to new circumstances. And the very important thing, most importantly of all probably, is that on these deeper levels, the currency of resonance is love. It is love that unites the separated. So when Tom is experiencing his dog and his uncle coming to him, and his dog throwing himself at him like you would have when the dog was alive. That is an act of reconciliation, which will have been completed for Tom after Tom's death. So he has a shadow of it in this life, in his meditations and in his contemplations. But it is my firm belief, really, that in his after Tom died, he, as well as other unitings, he will have been united with both Blackie and Tessa. And in that sense, we're looking at the unbreakable bonds of love. I don't mean desire. I don't mean all the complicated bits and pieces, really, that we get involved in relationship. When we talk about true love, we're talking about a resonance. We're talking about a connectedness. And it is that, really, that is the golden thread that runs through all the world. So when we enter into Grail space, when we practice the art of connection, the art of creating the webs of connection, what we're doing is entering into and participating in something that continues beyond our life and comes into its flowering beyond our life. Now I know that as the Lobo one dies with it tonight in a few days' time, I'm not going to be able to feel that, because what I will feel is my sadness, my loss, my grief, which is appropriate, or else am I going to feel, of course. But ultimately it is my faith that Obi and I will meet again, just like the other animals and the other people I've lost, who I feel truly resonant with. I will meet again. And a bit like David, you know, I'll be more than Ian, identifiably Ian, I believe. But more than Ian can be, because Ian has quite a lot of limitations. But, and in a way, that sort of is my faith. That is both my hope and my faith, which buttresses me against the times of doubt and sadness and despair. Not despair much these days, but certainly sadness.
Something I've always pondered a lot. I remember having even asked you before, but I can't remember what you said. Which is, why is it that sometimes I'm often really easily, I kind of quite easily get into contact with figures when I'm sad. But it's very rarely someone that I've known personally in real life. So like I can't, sometimes I get a sense of those people, like my grandparents or my dad or whatever, but when it's that sort of contact where there's a conversation like you've had with people, I haven't really known them. And I wonder why there's a difference. Is that just me?
No, I'm just trying to understand the question a bit more. Are you saying that you do get into contact with these people when you're sad?
Yeah, when I'm sad,
yeah.
I can sometimes get a sense of someone who's bad who I know, but I can quite often much more easily get into contact with someone I don't know, you know, like a guide or a teacher.
Well, I think it's more complicated to be in touch with people we know. It is also, you know, partly our grief and our missing of them it obscures us to a certain extent. I think it's kind of with inner beings. We've always been inner beings. We, you know, our relationship is just is based upon that. But I think when we're I think for me, when I get in touch with people who have died, they take me unawares. Where, you know, so it's almost like I feel their presence and I have some sense. But also I think that there's also something as well about the, the time not being right for that kind of reconciliation. That kind of union, I think there is something about that. They have their lives wherever they are, we have our lives wherever we are. And I think you can, well, you definitely can experience that, but I think, you can't when you're grieving. And what I experience, at least more likely, is that people appear, and they appear randomly. They seem to appear and disappear. Sometimes they come and there's a reason.
Yeah.
But that's normally long after my grief is not gone, of course, because the grief now goes, but is held in a less painful and active place.
Yeah.
But I think one of the technical actual problems is in terms of our own psychology, is because if it's a person we have loved and want to be in contact with, our very desire for that muddies the water and makes it more difficult than an inner figure we feel more neutral about.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And that's why I think often they catch us unawares. So when we get a sudden sense of the other, it often doesn't last very long, but it just is a sense of them, and which is of course lovely when you do get that sense.
Oh. Sometimes it's more like a feeling of their presence somehow, the conversation.
Well, that's mostly what I get. Well, rather than the conversation of words, it's a real sense of presence, it's just a sense of that person. I think that's often something that often happens, yeah.
My dreams.
Yes, I can certainly have in dreams, but or in synchronicities. There's all kinds of ways of communion between the living and the dead, really. Okay, we're at the end of our time, so let's just stop there. If Ali and I have to take Oberon to the vet first thing tomorrow morning, I'll let you know and give you an idea of when we'll start, because obviously I don't know what's going to happen right now, really. We'll have to see how things move on tonight. Well, I hope to see you tomorrow at 10 o'clock, and we'll continue our inquiry.
Obviously, yes, it's made by email, I
tell you, yeah. I'll email you all to let you know that what's happening and when I expect to be online again.
Thinking of your answer, yeah.
Thank you very much. That's very kind. Thank you. Okay, everybody. Thank you very much. Have a good evening. Have a good evening. We'll see you all tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.